Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes, Bruce Arthur from The Star in here. We're here until 7 p.m. It's Thursday Night Football on TSN tonight, a doubleheader on Thursday night. You get the Argos at home tonight, taking on Ottawa. You can hear it right here on TSN Radio. Watch it on TSN tonight. Then the second half of the doubleheader is the Riders in Edmonton taking on the Eskimos. And we've had this guy in a couple of times already this year. We're already making sure that if he's in town, we got to find a way to get him in studio. He'll be on the panel tonight. Longtime CFLer. Henry Burris back in studio. What's happening, Henry?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me in.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. Before we get to the CFL stuff, I want to ask you about this Urban Meyer story out of Ohio State. Just as a guy who was a stud quarterback at a good school, D1 school, you went to Temple, right?
Mm-hmm.
What would the reaction be like on the campus if 4 weeks out from opening night you found out that your coach has basically been suspended and may not actually be your coach? I mean, would you be going crazy? How would you react to that as a player on that team?
I mean, it'd be a huge shock because, when you talk about integrity, and that's something that, Urban Meyer has preached, ever since back in the day, even during his time at Florida, he always preached about integrity. And then something like this happened. I mean, as a player, you start to question, okay, what's going on here? Like, if you knew about this going on, you needed to say something. I mean, and we've seen that happen in other cases. I mean, Joe Paterno with a more extreme situation, and he was immediately fired. But you got to expect the same thing to happen in this case because as players, I mean, you helped build what the coach's legacy. But the coaches got you there because you trusted them with all your life and all your heart, and the parents as well. There's lots of chatter going on. And now the trust factor, if you allow him to come back, that's really going to be a tough obstacle for the players and also the parents and even the recruits,
right,
to get over.
Well, there's just so much investment in a D1 college football coach, yeah, like Urban Meyer, right? Like, there's so much riding on him in every way. The cynic in me wonders if the money will outweigh what's right when this comes down to the end. And we know that never happens in Division I football.
Oh, man. It happens always in Division I football, as you and I and all of us know. But, yeah. I mean, it's sad to see that because, I mean, we've seen examples of this happening way too often. And the fact is, we all got that booklet by now. But to see a guy like Urban Meyer, a guy who is so well respected, I mean, a guy who, when you see him, you think, man, that's a coach who's got it, who gets it. But then all of a sudden this happened. I mean, when you talk about a legacy that's been built like his has been and the things that he's accomplished, him going back to his old university at Ohio State, and now you see something like this happen, you don't remember anything that happened beforehand. No. Because, I mean, when you know somebody's life is being tattered and battered the way it is and being beaten over and over again and assaulted the way that he knew one of his employees was doing at home, if you have any realization of what's going on, you got to say something. Mm-hmm. You got to say something. Because then you look at the flip of that. What if something like that was happening to one of his players behind closed doors? Mm-hmm. Now you got to ask that same question. Is there something else going on? And if it was, would he say something?
Well, that's the point. Like, this is a guy who he's always won, right? His reputation on the field outside of Nick Saban, second to none. Yeah. I mean, that's what he represents. But you look back on his history in Florida, that was a program that had some real warts to it. I mean, there was like Aaron Hernandez played for him in Florida, and there were a bunch of arrests and there were a bunch of headaches, yet, they still won. Right. And he was the face of it with Tebow. And that's what you looked at. And they were in the SEC and you do whatever you have to do to win. And the same things apply with Ohio State ever since he's got there. I just wonder if there's not going to be a smoking gun, like if they cannot 100% determine that he knew everything.
Mm-hmm.
He may not be able to last at Ohio State, but I think he'll still get another job.
Oh,
I think he'll work
down
somewhere else. 100%. It's just a matter of time.
But the thing is, regardless of what happens to him, what's going to happen when the NCAA jumps in on this.
You know that's coming.
And that's coming. I mean, we saw what happened with Penn State, and that program is right now starting to get back on its feet, you know, with Saquon Barkley and guys like that helping resurrect the program. But what's going to happen to Ohio State? When you talk about the cream of the crop, one of the top programs in the country, I mean, it doesn't get any better than Ohio State.
Right.
So regardless of what the university does with Urban Meyer, like, what's going to happen when the NC2A steps in? Because ultimately, they have to. I mean, right now, they can't do what they did at Penn State, do what they did at other programs, and clamp down on them with the sanctions that they have because of dealings like this. They can't all of a sudden just get a broom and say, okay, nothing happened here. This is Urban Meyer. He's beloved. He's the poster boy. He's one of our favorite coaches. We'll just let this one go. You can't do that. You got to clamp down on Ohio State just as you did everybody else.
Henry Burris in studio. It's a doubleheader on Thursday Night Football on the CFL and TSN tonight. It's Argos Red Blacks and McLeod Bethel Thompson. That's the best handle in football. That's a great handle. He will make his debut as their starter tonight. We know Ricky Ray's not coming back anytime soon. I'm not expecting him to ever play again. But there was a lot of talk that James Franklin was the guy you had to get in the offseason and the best backup and a burgeoning starter. They didn't give him much time. What are you expecting out of their third-string quarterback tonight? And when you consider where we're at with the East, I mean, why can't they still be a playoff team?
Well, they definitely can. I mean, you look at Ottawa last year. Ottawa was a 1-5-1, 1-6-1, and all of a sudden they made a run winning 7 of their last 10, and next thing you know, they were playing in the East Division semifinal, or East Division semifinal there in Ottawa. And, you know, they had every opportunity to get to back to the Grey Cup last year. So it can happen. We've seen teams do it over and over again. And if there's a team definitely in this East Division that can turn it around as quickly as any team in this league, it's Toronto, because they still have the core group of guys that can get it done. We talked about their falters, and I mean, I don't think it was all James Franklin, but I talked to Mark Trestman before their opening game in Saskatchewan to kick off the season, and he talked about McLeod. He talked about Bethel Thompson. I mean, he talked about how much he loved this guy. He loved this kid, what he brought to the table. There were some things he loved about him, some things he thought he had to get better, and same with James Franklin. He said the same. There were things he loved about him and things he had to get better with. The thing I did not enjoy about Franklin last week, and I heard somebody mention this before, was after he threw a couple of interceptions, he was walking off the field, and you saw a close-up of this from the camera side, from a side angle. You saw a number of the players from Marcus Ball, a number of the guys running, picking his head up, saying, keep your head up. My thing is, as a quarterback, you can't put your head down.
Yeah.
I've had games where I've thrown 5 interceptions, but we found a way to win the game by 3 points in the end. The thing is, you can't put your head down. That's being a professional quarterback. You're going to have days like that. But the thing is, until you run out of your last bullet, you got to keep firing out there on the football field. You can't let your teammates down, and I think that's why McLeod is in this game.
So you got to put up a front, even even if you don't really believe
it. Exactly.
You got to pretend like you believe in yourself.
You can't be the first guy to throw up the white flag. You cannot be that. You're the leader of that team. You're the extension of the coach. And Mark Trestman, we know he's a fighter. Like, he's never going to give up. He's a guy where he could be down by 60 points. He's going to continue to fight. And as a quarterback, you got to do the same thing. And to me, that's why McLeod is playing.
So in that vein, what do you expect Johnny Manziel to do in terms of body language and how he's going to act when, in his first CFL game, he gets his rear end handed to him?
Oh, well, it's coming. It's coming. And I know he's doing a lot of talking on his podcast, saying that I'm going to come out there and I'm going to throw bullets and everything. Well, the one thing he didn't allude to is what's actually going to happen on game day, because that's what matters. I mean, yeah, you can be in the studio, being behind the microphone, you know, doing your Drake impression, saying what you want to say. But hey, when you step out there on that football field, nobody cares what you said. I mean, you can be a studio gangster all you want, but when you step on the field, it's all about what happens between the whistles. And trust me, playing against his old team from Hamilton, they heard what he said during the preseason, talking about, oh, guys can hit me anyway, we'll bring it, I'm a soldier, I'm whatever. Yeah, that's all fine and dandy, but you were playing against guys that are no longer with teams, Johnny. Now you're playing against the real deal, the guys that are really going to hit you. You're going to play against the big boys up front who are going to bring that heat and make sure they can hit you. They're going to mix up coverages that they knew you couldn't execute against and that you did not see as far as during regular season practices. They're going to throw stuff at Johnny that he's never seen before. I feel bad for him because he's the savior. He's a sacrificial lamb for the Montreal Alouettes, but this is a desperate program looking for a breath of hope, and Johnny Manziel is that guy. And personally, I didn't think Vernon Adams did bad. I think it's more of the things around the quarterback, the reason why they're not good, not just the guy pulling the trigger.
Henry Burris in studio. That's what I expect tomorrow night. If I'm Hamilton, man, I send the house constantly.
Bring it.
Send it, right? Make him make plays, because that offensive line will crack. It will definitely break down, and we'll see what Johnny's got. I'm not expecting much tomorrow. I think it could be a bloodbath tomorrow night. I hope not. I want for him and the league and Montreal to you know, give us something fun here, entertain us tomorrow night. But I'm not bracing myself for that.
Well, I'm with you, and just as everybody, we want to see Manziel turn it around. I mean, we know what this kid brings to the table. He brings a lot of flash, dash, and excitement. But again, you know, You can't take the cake out of the oven before it's risen to where you can put icing on it. Then once you put the icing on it, you can eat it. Well, this cake hasn't risen yet. I mean, we're talking about 4 days of practice. Baker Mayfield, who just signed a $32 million contract with $22 million guaranteed as a number one pick, will not start for the Cleveland Browns. Why? Because he's not ready.
Yeah.
And he still has a six-week training camp to go through in the NFL. Well, I mean, we're talking about Johnny Manziel, 4 days of practice
right.
against the worst team in the league. I mean, I feel for the kid. I mean, he's being thrown into a position where he's not going to be successful, but that's the job of the GM and the head coach, but it's not happening in this case.
How long does it take most quarterbacks to figure out, like what we were talking about earlier is, you need to know how long it's going to take for the ball to get there, right? Like,
yeah,
you need
right.
to know what window you can safely throw a ball into. So that's knowing personnel, it's knowing schemes, and it's knowing your arm, and it's knowing the dimensions of the field. How long does it take guys to figure out that in the CFL, all this stuff is different, right?
Oh,
like, everything about it is different.
Yeah, everything's different from the offense. I mean, the defenses, the dimensions on the field, the rules. Mm-hmm. He's learned three offenses in a year. Not even a year.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in Hamilton. He was in that spring league, whatever it was called, the dippity-doo-dah yeah. league down there. And now he's with the Montreal Alouettes. I mean, he's learning three offenses in a matter of months, and you expect this guy to come out there and put on a cape and fly? Well, he's human just like everybody else who's came into this league, who's had a list full of accolades, and they stepped into this league looking for an opportunity to play. And Johnny Manziel is another quarterback in that list. Well, my thing is this. He doesn't even know the names of the players on his team.
Yeah.
So how can you expect a guy to lead a team of a guy? He's like, hey, you, number 15, go run that route. Well, that's not how you're going to be a successful leader on any team. You can do all the rah-rah speeches yep. you want to, but honestly, when the lines are drawn, the lights are on, and the cameras are on, that's all that matters is that you can bring it and know your plays, and hopefully they curb down the playbook to hopefully help this guy be successful come tomorrow evening.
You know the other teams are going to be gunning for him.
Oh,
Hamilton's going to be all over him. But do you sense that his teammates in Montreal are fully supporting the comeback season here?
Well,
I mean, are they on board with this or what?
Well, that's all they have because, again, like I said, Vernon Adams, I thought, laid it down for that team last week. I thought it wasn't his fault as far as the way that team played. I mean, they left 19 points on the field. They had a drop touchdown pass, three missed field goals. That's 16 points. It would have been a 42-39 game against Edmonton with Mike Riley. Well, the thing is, Johnny Manziel's not going to do any better in
right.
this case. I mean, he's still trying to learn the playbook. But again, the guys are going to rally behind him because it's Johnny Football. He's that breath of fresh hope, and they're hoping that he can help resurrect the things, help lift the guys' level. But it's hard to lift the level when guys know around you more than what you do. And trust me, as a quarterback, mm-hmm. I know that. And so in this case, yeah, they're going to be rah-rah and hoping he can do something. But the moment a couple of bad plays happen, what's going to happen then is the problem for me. And how many opportunities is a fan base going to give Johnny Manziel before they look to that sideline at Cavis and say, okay, here we go again. Who's next up?
Is it almost more dangerous that he can make plays with his legs? And if things break down, he's going to be in a lot of positions where bad things can happen.
Yeah.
If you're running with the ball in the CFL.
I mean, 100%. And these guys are faster up here than in the NFL. I mean,
yeah.
they're smaller, quicker, faster. And you have a much bigger field. But this field is quickly shrinking as we've seen the defenses taking over this game. Even the top quarterbacks are struggling against defenses in this league. And you expect Manziel to come in. And, yeah, he's going to rely on his feet just as he did in the preseason. A lot of the balls that he threw, they were late. Everything he threw was outside the numbers into the flats where some of the weakest spots are and the easier completions in the CFL. I'm waiting to see him throw a ball over the middle. He did not do that in the preseason. He threw maybe a couple balls down the field, but this guy has no idea what he's seeing right now, and he needs to use his feet to extend plays, to use his improvisation skills, which he did a lot at Texas A&M. But in professional football, the guys are faster, they're quicker, and they watch film too.
Yeah.
So they're going to be leery of him getting outside the pocket, and they're going to have defensive guys strictly keying on him, spying him to make sure they're right on his tail as soon as he tries to escape out of the pocket.
Henry Burris in studio. That's why I'm skeptic, because whenever we reference anything that Manziel did positively, we go to college.
Yeah.
Right, we're like, well, remember at A&M? Yeah, that was like 5 years ago.
What else has there been?
Well, but that's the point.
Exactly.
Like, this guy hasn't started a game in over 2 years, and when he started, he was with the Browns, and it was a disaster.
Yeah.
Now, you can blame the Browns, and believe me, the Browns deserve a lot of that blame, but Manziel was never comfortable in the NFL. And, like, yesterday, he's trying to put forth this front that all the nerves are out of the way, and because he fumbled the ball that went off his helmet in Pittsburgh, we're supposed to believe that all of a sudden he's Joe Cool tomorrow night. Like,
exactly.
I understand what kind of front he's trying to put forth. Like, it's kind of similar to what you said earlier with James Franklin. You got to put forth this front as the quarterback that you're cool, calm, and collected. Mm-hmm. But he better be nervous.
Yeah. Yeah,
he better be nervous. Like, what's wrong with some nerves, man? He haven't played in over 2 years.
Exactly. I mean, you got to be real. I mean, because my thing is right now, he's like that hot date, but he has no substance with him. Because, and the players know that.
Right.
Like, you can say whatever you want to say. Hamilton knows that for sure because they've been around this guy for the last number of months. They know he has no substance in him because he doesn't know the game. He hasn't played, in, like you said, since December of 2015 in an actual regular season game where the cameras will be on, all eyes will be on him. He knows this is his big moment, so he can front all he wants to. But I know tonight, this guy, he will not sleep well. And I know he's going to be cramming for that final exam, which is going to take place tomorrow night, because he doesn't know all the plays in that playbook. And even the ones that he does know, guys, 4 days of practice, is that going to get you ready for one of the biggest moments in your life, trying to resurrect your career? Definitely not. And Hamilton's a very good team. And what's going to happen when Mazzoli is scoring points and throwing touchdowns on that defense and they become one-dimensional and Tyrell Sutton doesn't matter? He's not going to be able to use that, and it's all going to be on number two. And unfortunately, it's not going to work well then.
It's also the only team in the league that's regularly seen Johnny Manziel play football and is prepared for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, these guys have been practicing against him in the reps he has gotten. So it's not like he can even surprise them.
Exactly. Oh. And, I mean, this is a defense that shut out Trevor Harris and all those weapons that he has, kept them out of the end zone. So now you expect Johnny Manziel, with the lack of weapons that he has around him, to be able to go out and execute against the secondary who's led by Delvin Bro. And we know how good this guy is. And, I mean, he'd be in the NFL with the Denver Broncos if it wasn't for him just trying to heal from an injury and didn't allow him to pass his physical. But this guy's up here locking down receivers week in and week out. And what do you expect Johnny Manziel to do? Go out and throw the first pass up into the boundary against a guy like Delvin Bro. Oh, you need to check your scouting report. Oh, I don't even know my receiver's name. I just threw it to that guy. Like, of course, that's the evolution of quarterbacking. But my thing is, guys, it's all about putting a player in a position to be successful. And if they want this guy to be the limelight of the league and the limelight of the Montreal Alouettes and save Kavis Reed's job, they need to put this guy in a position to be successful. Mm-hmm. Give him another week. Put him in a smaller package. Let Vernon Adams play this week. Let Johnny Manziel wait against Ottawa next week on the 11th to come out with this debut. At least he'll be in a much better position to be successful.
Not going
to
happen, though. Johnny football starting tomorrow night on TSN. Tonight it's a doubleheader. Argos, Red Blacks, and then it's the Riders in Edmonton taking on the Eskimos. You can watch all that on TSN. You can hear the Argos game right here on TSN Radio. He's Henry Burris. He'll be on the panel tonight. Always appreciate you popping by. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, guys. Always a pleasure. Enjoy the games tonight.
You got it. There's Henry Burris. We're already breaking down what William Nylander had to say about his contractual scenario. Everyone's got a read on his psychology here.
It's August, man.
Yes, it is. We'll let you hear it. We'll get into it next. Thanks again to Henry Burris for joining us in studio. Cool to get a guy who lit up college football and played D1. You know, this Urban Meyer Ohio State story is so big right now. And he obviously didn't go through this at Temple when he was there, but you can imagine just the shock in Columbus and on that campus. And they're in camp. Like, college football season's right around the corner. Yeah. And here is the legendary Urban Meyer, who's been placed on administrative leave. And every hour that passes, it feels more and more likely he's not going to coach that team again.
Well, we don't know everything yet, but I think we probably know enough. I covered when Joe Paterno went down. I went down to Happy Valley. So they played Nebraska on the Saturday. Paterno got fired on the week after, I think. Or maybe it was it was that week. It was Paterno had been fired, and I was in Happy Valley for 24 hours. I got there on the Friday. I went to the candlelight vigil they had on the Friday night. Went to the game on the Saturday. I have never been in an environment where there was more going on than there was in that town, because everybody in that town had an opinion. Everybody in that town had an experience. You could walk up and down the street and swing a cat and hit someone who had something they could tell you that was interesting about what was going on at Penn State. Because those college football towns And those programs at this level are so big, and they're so intertwined with their communities, so dominant in their communities. So many people must have known this.
Mm-hmm.
So many people must have known that this was going on, that domestic violence was happening at this level. And if in the best case scenario, if Urban Meyer didn't know, that's a dereliction of duty. Because he's a CEO, and this guy's one of his closest employees.
That's
and
why
everybody around him.
Exactly. And that's why I think he's going down. Like, look what happened with Rick Pitino. That was Pitino's stance, was I didn't know about these recruiting violations. And they couldn't prove if he did or not, but they went to him eventually and said, well, you were supposed to, so you got to go.
Yeah.
And this is obviously something that is much more serious. We're talking about, you know, domestic abuse and assault and violence and... They fired the guy. He just got fired last month. Like, he was still on the staff.
Yeah.
And Urban Meyer just last week came out and said, yeah, I was aware of it back in the day when he was an intern, but I had, you know, I looked into it in 2015, I think he said, but the most recent allegations, he said, I was not aware of, I didn't know. And now this story breaks yesterday from Brett McMurphy, a college football insider, and now he's on paid administrative leave. And what we noticed with Penn State was it happened quickly. Like, the ball got rolling quickly. And there it was impossible. Everyone knew, again, it felt like everybody knew that Paterno was aware of the Sandusky stuff for a long time. And when it was happening, mm-hmm. as horrible as it sounds, it was a different era. It was a different time where stuff did get covered up. We're not living in that world anymore. These ironclad institutions are now under the microscope, and they're no longer impenetrable. They will be broken down if something happens.
There's a part of me that wonders if he could survive, because there aren't a lot of... There aren't a lot of guys like this, and I don't mean this in terms of, I think he should get fired. I think if you know that domestic violence is going on your staff, that's not a marital issue, that's a crime that's happening. And it's a crime that had been going on for several years, allegedly. And if he knew about it and did nothing and brought this guy from Florida to Ohio State and continued to prop up his career and lend him the halo of Urban Meyer absolutely deserves to get fired for this. I just look at how valuable he will be to the institution. There's always a tipping point, right? But Joe Paterno was old. Joe Paterno was not a young man. Urban Meyer could, if nothing interrupted him, coach Ohio State for another 30 years.
He could, but Paterno, though, was immortal in terms of his legacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, because he had been at Penn State for like 40-plus years or whatever it was... Yeah. He represented even more to that small town than what Urban Meyer does in Columbus.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, like, and I hadn't been there, but just reading about it and watching movies and documentaries on him.
You could buy two credit cards that were like the university credit cards, and one of them had the statue with a lion on it, and the other one had Joe on it.
Right, right? Exactly. Like, synonymous with the school. Oh, like, Urban Meyer is not synonymous with Ohio State.
Exactly.
But you're right in terms of his track record. But this is a guy who's been a renegade his whole career. Like, if you were following what went down in Florida.
What was really happening
yeah. with certain players and the amount of arrests and the amount of allegations and the stories, it all felt shiny and clean because Tebow was the face of it. And Tebow was Tebow.
Yeah.
And Meyer was this rah-rah, we're just going to win one for the Gipper, blah, blah, blah. And it's the South and the SEC and they were a dynasty. But this is a guy who's, you know, always kind of... If you dig deep enough, realize that values and integrity were really not a priority. What it was can I recruit the best player and can I win? So now what could end up taking him down is the image. Like, is the image of the school and whether or not they feel like they're going to lose recruits.
This is, and it's interesting because the environment in which this is happening is different than it would have been even 2 years ago. Right? Like, the Me Too movement has changed a lot about the popular perception of issues involving harassment and violence towards women. And I think that probably makes it more likely that he will be fired. I just, like, it shouldn't have had to change, but here we are. On the one hand, you say, if you are Ohio State, and it is obvious that Urban Meyer knew this for years and let it go, just let it happen. How could you keep him? But sports fandom is so tribal. Like, you ask yourself, how can you sell this to female fans or male fans who care about this kind of stuff? It's so tribal that, again, we were talking about this the other day with, what were we talking about?
Well, Roberto Osuna.
With Roberto Osuna, that's what it was. Is people cheer for innocence of their favorite sports icons in the same way that they cheer for success. And they identify with them in such fundamental ways. It's a lot like politics at the moment. Is the tribes are so powerful. That's the only thing that I think could save them, that and the money. But I think as this is going to get worse before it gets better. We're going to learn more, and it's going to be bad.
I'm not convinced he's going to get fired. I think what's going to happen is we're going to have a mutually agree to step down moment coming rapidly. And I think what's probably happening behind the scenes is the lawyers are coming together, and they're like, okay, how are we going to deal with this in terms of the money? Because this is a publicly funded institution. It's a state university.
Yep.
And he's the highest paid member of the state. He's getting paid more money than I believe Saban. I think he's the highest paid college coach in football. Mm. And there's a clause in his contract that says if you're fired for cause or with cause, you get nothing. And if you're just fired based on performance, you get all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think they're going to have a smoking gun. Because I don't think his wife is going to come out and say, no, I 100% told him. I don't think she's going to say that on the record. And I don't get the impression like Urban Meyer is going to have a come to Jesus moment in the next 24 or 48 hours and say, all right, you got me.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think that's going to happen. My guess would be this is what will save him. Not at Ohio State, but will save him at his next gig.
Yeah. And you know what? If you're Urban Meyer, that's probably what you're playing for.
Exactly. Right?
Because you can leave Ohio State, take a year off like he did after he left Florida. I need to spend more time with my family,
right,
have a healthier lifestyle, and resurface.
USC will hire him.
I was just going to say USC, like a big school far enough away, a great institution slightly off the radar. That'd be exactly.
It's waiting to get back to the glory days. They've been waiting for a while.
And one thing, and this is a kind of a bigger point. One thing with the culture right now, with Twitter, with Facebook, with the way that, with how fast the news cycle is. It feels like we don't have a collective memory anymore.
No, we don't.
As a society, we just don't. There's too much news. There's too much bad stuff all the time. And so we forget. Like, this is the story right now in sports. And the NFL is going to start. And we're going to get baseball playoffs. And the NBA and the NHL are going to start. And in a year, this will look really bad on Urban Meyer, but it will have faded for a lot of people.
Well, and here's the comparison between this scenario and the Osuna scenario. Is this scenario, though, is not going to be in the courts. He didn't break the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't. He broke an unwritten rule that if you know about something like this, you follow through on it, especially if you're a figurehead of an organization the way that Urban Meyer is in Ohio State. But he's not at risk of going to jail. This isn't going to go to the court systems. No. The cops were never involved. Now, maybe they can do that retroactively, but he personally is not in line for a significant investigation to the point where, like, the cops and the FBI are involved. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't assume anyway.
He hasn't perjured himself to the FBI.
Exactly.
As far as
exactly. And, you know, the school can do their digging, but it doesn't mean they have to publicly go forth with that.
Yeah.
The real gamble that Houston has taken here with Osuna, outside of the obvious, the fact that he accepted guilt with the 75-game suspension, did not appeal
the equivalent of a no-contest plea. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, yes, I'll take the longest suspension in history for this type of offense.
Yep.
Obviously, that makes you guilty in the eyes of baseball. But there are still some smoking guns that could come out. You know, like the Osuna stuff.
This is going to trial.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, a video could come out in a month.
Yep.
You know, like, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, we obviously have to release you now.
And like, the trick is, with anything involving kind of public profile, where is the zone at which it becomes untenable to stay in your job or for people to keep you in your job? And it's different in different places, right? Like, it's different for Roberto Osuna and the closer of the Houston Astros than it is for, say, the President of the United States. But Houston faces no real consequences. That's one thing that I've kind of thought a lot about in this. Let's say they trade for him and it turns out to be really bad. Let's say he does jail time. The Houston Astros will not face any meaningful consequences at the box office for this. I would strongly suspect they do not face meaningful consequences on the field for this, because it's not like the pieces they moved were integral parts of their World Series operation necessarily. Their fans are still going to be there. Like, it takes a lot for an organization to alienate its fans in a way that it actually feels it.
Absolutely.
In markets in which they're already strong.
Yes.
Like, it takes time. And so
it takes losing.
What they are doing is they are trading upon their reputation, their brand, the power of the affinity that people feel towards them. And they're saying, yeah, we had a zero tolerance policy, But it's only if you do it while you're in the Astros organization. So we have a no murder policy here, but we will trade for the guy who murdered in a different uniform. Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't hold up to even the basis levels of scrutiny, but that's all Houston feels like they need to throw out there in order to justify this. And that tells you a lot about where they think they are.
Well, exactly. And the 24-hour news cycle, because once the dust settles,
there's no collective memory anymore.
No, you move on. Because again, in Houston, they're going to the playoffs. Now, they've had a skid lately, but they're going to the playoffs, and they're going to be a really good team, and there's a very good chance they're going to compete for another World Series.
Yep.
So that will distract, and that's what people are going to jump on board with. You've also got the Texans back in camp, so J.J. Watt's doing his thing, and you got Deshaun Watson, who's healthy again.
A supernova player.
Absolutely. Yep. So you got the Rockets, who are going to be in camp. Like, there's too much going on there. As much as it doesn't feel like it should be that way, it is just the reality of it. That's the way it works.
I've been to one Jays game as a fan this year. I was right behind the plate, third row. And you know who closed for the New York Yankees? Aroldis Chapman.
Yep. World Series champ.
Yep.
But also a guy who we got a pretty good idea of what happened in his personal life.
And just wait, we're going to have this entire conversation again if and when an NHL team tries to sign Slava Voynov.
Which I think is going to happen.
And we know what happened in that case. Read up on that case. It's horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever NHL team signs him is going to make the calculation that people don't remember enough, people don't care enough about the issue, or that they have enough credibility with their fan base to carry it off. It's going to be bad. It's going to be awful. It's going to happen.
It's happening.
Yep.
If he wants to come back, he'll come back. Now, the NHL is going to have to levy a suspension because him running away from the country doesn't count.
Yeah.
So that's going to put them in a position to lay down some laws, and that's going to be a part of the calculation that comes with signing him, because I would guess they're going to, I don't know how long they'll suspend him. I don't know how much precedence is really in the NHL for domestic violence, but let's say it's 25 games.
Yeah.
That's a big chunk of your season.
It could even be more, because this is one that was, there was evidence, like there was a lot of really bad evidence.
And other sports have taken the lead on this,
but
in
again,
terms of how badly you got to levy out suspensions.
What a lot of, lacking the key element of shame that used to be a part of our society, institutions and people kind of just count on people to get bored and distracted, to be too busy with their lives, with trying to make ends meet, with trying to get the kids to daycare, with whatever it is.
And there's truth in that, though, Bruce.
That's
the truth.
That's
sports.
They keep getting proven right.
Exactly. Because sports, a lot of times, and I know people don't want to hear this, and it's germane to what's been going on in the NFL world with the protesting, with the anthems. A lot of people that are against the protesting, they're not against it because of the cause. They're against it because they don't want to be bothered with the idea of an intellectual conversation when they really just want to drink beers and gamble and watch their team.
Woohoo, yep.
And that's the truth. Like, a lot of people, it's not that they don't understand the cause or that they're being ignorant.
What's interesting, I think a lot of people are, though. A lot of people, the mere idea, if you ask, I bet if you did public polling on this stuff, and I'm sure they have, what are they protesting? Are they protesting the flag, the troops, the anthem, or something else? How many people would correctly
say racial injustice?
Yeah,
I don't know, but it's been hijacked by the idea that it's about the flag and the troops.
A lot of bad faith arguments,
but a lot of that was also manipulated because they knew what it was. Like, Trump goes on these tirades. Trump knows the actual cause behind it, or I would like to believe he does, but he's not going to adhere to it because he wants to spin it a different way. He's going to take it a different
way. He's using it as a cultural wedge issue.
Exactly.
And by the way, when the NFL kicks up again,
it's going to be an absolute circus.
Is coming all the way back,
yes.
And we're going to do the entire thing again.
It's going to be an explosive season.
Every week.
Yes. And that's the, and again, a lot of people are just like, can we move on? Like, it's, you know, these are heavy topics, serious topics, and a lot of people just want to mess around and have fun and escape for a few hours and then go back to their life.
Because the whole news is heavy topics,
yeah.
Man. There's a lot of stuff that can get you depressed in the news today.
William Nylander's been in town the past few days talking about his contractual scenario. We'll let you hear some of his audio. It's not long. William doesn't speak much.
His extensive remarks on his own contractual situation.
It's not going to be groundbreaking stuff, but some people are trying to spin it. There's two ways to spin
it. It's August.
All right, you got to come up with a spin. This is the spin zone, all right? Forget Bill O'Reilly. This is the spin zone. Bruce Arthur's in here from The Star. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, Bruce Arthur's in here from The Star. It is giveaway time. Phone lines are open, 416-870-1050. Caller 10 at 416-870-1050. Caller 10 gets 50 Mac coins in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the Big Mac up here in Canada. And each McCoin is worth one Big Mac.
I was going to ask what they were worth.
So basically, we're giving away 50 Big Macs.
And you can use them at any point the rest of your life.
Between now and the end of the year.
Oh,
so yes. You better get after it.
It's a bit of a commitment.
Very much so.
If you don't like Big Macs, do not do this.
Well, you can divvy it out, right? You can give it to 50 different people if
That's
you want.
True.
Or you could eat 50 if you want. I mean, you can do whatever you want. So 416-870-1050. Caller 10 picks up 50 Mac coins. Got to get that right. You want to hear this riveting commentary from William Nylander?
Do I?
Who was at Smash Fest last night? He's the only one of the big three kids that needs a contract. His deal is up.
They have to do a contract.
Right. He cannot play.
Or he won't play. Yeah.
Yes. So he was asked about what he would prefer, because this has been the debate all year. You're going to get a bridge deal, which would be a 1, 2, maybe 3-year deal, or a long-term deal upwards of 8 years. Here's what Nylander said last night.
Oh, I mean, of course I want long-term. That's what I'd want to do, so... That's but we'll take it slow, day by day, and see what happens.
Yeah, so there's William Nylander.
Of course I want long-term.
Yes.
And that's the only words there that really matter. He did also say that Kyle wants it to be slow, Kyle Dubas. So they're slow walking him, and that's part of negotiation, applying pressure and all of that. We're going to over-obsess about this because it's Toronto and it's the Leafs and everything about it. But this is actually really important for the future of the franchise, because whatever William Nylander does, of the three young guys that need to be signed in the next 2 years, he has the least in terms of like brick and mortar resume. He has not produced as many points per game in his first 2 years, or first 3 years, I guess, as Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews. He's the third wheel of these three guys so far. He could still pass Matthews, I'm sure, Matthews. So what's he signed for? Is it 6? Is it 7? Are you getting a Pasternak deal? Are you getting a Dreisaitl deal?
He's not getting a Dreisaitl deal. There's no way.
Here's a funny one. I just looked this up. So guys who've played some games and who, like, basically since lockout 1, before they're 21, you have a list of, like, 27 guys who scored at least 0.7 points per game. Okay? So it's a hard thing to do. This is in... like over a decade. Your 22nd highest points per game on this list of young guys before the 21 is William Nylander, 0.73. Number 23 on this list is Leon Draisaitl, 0.72.
Not surprised by that. Now, the year before he cashed in, he had like 75 points or something like that. And he plays center, which is a big factor.
Although he's played a ton with McDavid as well.
Yes, he was. And in the Leafs,
just as Nylander has played with Austin Matthews.
With Austin Matthews, absolutely. Listen, Nylander is the one that gets criticized more than the other two, because he's got a reputation of being somewhat of an inconsistent player. He's got a nonchalant kind of style. And
he makes it look a little too easy sometimes.
Yeah, but I think those numbers you pointed out would probably surprise a lot of people. Like how young he still is and how good he is. Like William Nylander is a legit stud.
He's really good.
But I think if you're Kyle Dubas and company and you hear him say, I want to be here, I would rather a long-term deal, that should be music to the ears of Kyle Dubas, because you've got to take advantage then of a better cap hit. Because some people are trying to spin that as he's not confident. Mm-hmm. Like, that means he's not confident. He doesn't want to bet on himself that if he takes a two-year deal. What it means to me is that he doesn't want to leave. He wants to be here. And in order to be here, you might have to take a bit less in terms of the cap hit. And that's what you've got to be selling if you're the Maple Leafs.
And he wants guaranteed money. How many good players are taking bridge deals still?
Not many.
Guys have figured out, give me my money now. Give me guaranteed money. This is a game where your career can end on any play. Let's go. Here's the guy one step up on the under 21 list that I looked at in terms of points per game in the last basically 15 years. Philip Forsberg. Philip Forsberg signed a 6-year deal, $36 million a year. That's exactly what you want for William Nylander. If you do 8 years, $6 million a year, you are laughing.
That's money.
Kyle Dubas going to high-five every member of his family for like a year.
He'd do that, I think, immediately if that was on the table.
And the question is, how much higher can William Nylander go?
And I don't think he can go much higher. I don't, because I think what they'll hang over him again based on these comments is, okay, we're fine with going 2 years. And I think in terms of the confidence level, again, some people are spinning that as, oh, he's not willing to gamble. I think he's actually so confident that he feels like if he takes a bridge deal, he's going to light this league on fire the next 2 years, and then they're going to have to move on from him because then he's going to have to make them pay.
What happened?
He wants to be here. This is exactly what Leaf fans have been waiting for, because they've psyched themselves into this idea that, oh, there's too much star power and some of these guys don't want to be here and they don't want to be fourth or fifth on the marquee. And it's not a reality. They want to be in Toronto with the Maple Leafs because they understand how good they are and what it would mean to actually win here.
I do think that, like, if this team was unwilling to give Austin Matthews real money, I don't think he's not taking Sidney Crosby money. Let me put it that way.
No.
So there are breaking points to that idea. William Nylander, they're not going to have Zach Hyman on that line at least to start the year next year, right? It looks like Patty Marleau may move up there, which I think makes them better offensively. That's better hands, better speed. And there's a lot you can do with that. Nylander, I mean, he could bet on himself and have two really great years with a better Austin Matthews, with Patrick Marleau for the first year. I don't know about the second. And he could maybe come up big. But the other thing is, if he signs a bridge deal, he'll be re-signing when they've got Tavares under contract long-term. Austin Matthews will have gotten his money, and Mitch Marner will have gotten his money, and then you get squeezed out,
right,
man.
That's what
because
I'm saying.
Mitch Marner, that to me is the wild card, is Mitch Marner. Austin Matthews can get paid. Austin Matthews, I would predict, $12 million a year. That's the number I think that you're going to wind. Like, that's, I think, where
they're hoping it'll be the Tavares deal. I think that's what they're hoping.
Yeah.
8 years, 11 mil. You guys both get the same amount. You're both great players. He was a UFA, so we had to do this. You're an RFA, so we don't have to do that.
And to which, if I'm Austin Matthews, I say, I was third in points per game last year behind Nathan MacKinnon and Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid got 12. Give me 12. Because he thinks he's that good. He thinks he's as good as any player in hockey.
Yes.
And he's, barring McDavid and Crosby, it's possible we're going to find out in the next year or two that he's right.
And he's represented by the same people McDavid are.
And McDavid did give money back, remember, which, again,
that was a PR move.
Except that it was also, this is hockey players. Hockey players can be shamed into taking less money. There are not that many professional athletes on earth for which that is the case. But when Connor McDavid can take less money, Sidney Crosby signed because he has a numerical superstition. Like, this is a league in which the players are captive to a degree to the teams and have been for a long time.
I think that's what's evident here with Nylander again. I think he's an incredibly confident guy, man. This mm-hmm. guy oozes confidence. He grew up in an NHL family. He grew up in NHL rinks. He knows the way it works. But I do feel like he knows I got to sign long term so that I don't put myself in a position where I'm the odd man out in two years.
Can't get squeezed out because, like,
which is again exactly what you want to hear, because he's probably got to be charitable here and give back some money.
Like, you look at the core of money they have under contract on this team. There's a lot of guys who are getting paid for the next 3-4 years, and so if Austin gets 11 or 12, either way, if he gets 11, you've got two guys making 22. And you're going to have Mitch Marner. Like, again, Mitch Marner to me is the wild card because he's a level up. Like, he scored at the level of John Tavares in points per game before he was 21, rather than Leon Draisaitl or Philip Forsberg. He's produced more. And now he's going to play with John Tavares. Last year, Marner was on a 92-point pace once you put him on the second line with Nazem Kadri. What's he going to do now? He could have a 100-point season, and then you got to sign him.
Yeah, if I'm Marner, I'm not signing for anything this summer.
Outside of
a reasonable contract that they put forth,
$9.5 million a year. Let's do that.
Right, like, the Kucherov deal.
Like, then
basically,
you go, okay, yeah, give me Nikita Kucherov money. Like, that's a discount potentially for him, because if he's had, if you got to look at these guys in terms of their points per minute, their points per game, the situations they've been in. Marner's going to produce. If he stays healthy, he is going to produce. And again, Matthews per minute last year, there were two guys who scored more per minute in all situations than Austin Matthews. This guy's really good. So if those two guys cost you $21 million, and you've got Tavares at 11, and you've got Morgan Riley, and you've got Nazem Kadri, and you've got Freddie Anderson, you've got Nikita Zaitsev, you've got a lot. You got to re-sign Jake Gardner potentially. You got a lot of guys making a lot of money.
Yeah. No, that's why that was a part of the question right after the dust settled. You know, when Tavares signed here, it was just parading in the street and euphoria, and everyone was so excited, and why wouldn't you be? But then reality eventually is going to kick in, that we live in a hard cap era, and it gets complicated. Now, what has also been, I think, lost in that conversation is that the cap does generally go up every single year.
It had a couple flat years in there.
There
are limits to where it can go.
But it is
starting to go up again.
But here's another interesting angle to that, is that the Leafs can actually control some of the salary cap with how well they play and how far they go.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can generate so much money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if they go deep into the playoffs, the amount of jerseys that's going to be... Imagine the amount of hockey-related revenue that's going to come with the Maple Leafs being successful will benefit them greatly, because it'll factor into the amount of cap moving up.
TV ratings, merchandise, just all the ways you can generate money with a Stanley Cup contending Leafs team. That can bump the needle of a salary cap.
Yes.
I honestly think that.
Big time. And not to mention, if the gambling element comes in and that pumps some money into the system, I mean, if Seattle's coming in a few years.
I don't think the gambling money's going anywhere. And the thing with the Seattle thing is you don't have to share that with the players.
No, you don't.
That's the genius of expansion money. It's clean.
You're right. The immediate
cash in a paper bag.
But the jersey sales and all that, because that's what Vegas did, right? Like, there was a big bump this year because Vegas generated a lot of money.
I can't see gambling having a huge impact on the NHL coffers.
All right, we'll get into this in the next hour.
Yeah.
We'll get back into the Urban Meyer Ohio State situation. The Jays are in action tonight. Tyler Clippard is starting for them. Clippard is starting for the Jays. Bruce Arthur's in here from the Star. I'm Brian Hayes. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.